All right, everybody. Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. Nate Geary here, hour three, getting underway. Got a couple of great guests on tap for you coming up next. I'll give you a quick preview. We've got Keith Smith coming up here in just one moment. Keith is a writer for Yahoo Sports in the NBA, so we'll talk to him a little bit about the NBA restart, which happened in single-digit days. We are just 9 days away from the official NBA restart of July 20th, and then at 1:30 following Keith, we'll have Jess Matana. Jessica is a producer and writer over at Sports Illustrated and former Notre Dame grad. We're going to talk about the effects of COVID in college football. A lot of breaking news this week on some of the accommodations college football is making or attempting to make in order to get this 2020 season at some point underway. But let's talk NBA now and go to the Wester Hotline, where Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports and several other platforms as well joins me on the Wester Hotline. First and foremost, Keith, thank you so much for making time for us here in Buffalo to talk a little NBA. We do really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
No, my pleasure. First and foremost, what a whirlwind it's been. And, you know, I mean, obviously Buffalo isn't the largest NBA market, but, you know, I do find it fitting. A lot of us watch, you know, Toronto Raptors basketball being here. I do find it fitting that we're on the precipice of what could be, I mean, obviously the season, they're going to try to have it, but I'm not going to rule out that, you know, games end up, this thing doesn't end up getting canceled and punted until the 2021 season. So I'm not going to say that's totally out of the picture at this moment, but I do find it fitting that the last time the Toronto Raptors won an NBA championship, the very next season was canceled due to the Spanish flu. I don't want to say there might be a curse surrounding the Toronto Raptors, but that is a heavy coincidence, wouldn't you say?
It is. That's something I wasn't even aware of. So that's interesting to know. Yeah, and then shortly thereafter when the Blue Jays won.
That's right.
Series, they wiped out a Major League Baseball season. So I guess the key to keeping sports alive is keep Toronto teams from winning titles.
That's got to be the case. I didn't know that. We just taught each other about some Canadian professional sports. you know, some folklore there. So that's very interesting, Keith. Obviously, with the season getting ready to go underway, the storylines have really been surrounded by. Okay, well, who is playing and who isn't? And I think most importantly here, most of the league's largest stars are planning on playing. Is there an expectation, though, that things could change and potentially change quickly? We know that a lot of what they're trying to do with creating these bubbles for the NBA is quarantine everything in one area so that, you know, no outsiders can come in. They're there quarantining for 14 days before games start. Having said all that, I think, you know this as much as I do, watching this thing play out from afar, is things can change quickly. Do you believe the NBA is in a position to change on the fly if, you know, dramatic things change for the worse over the next 2 weeks?
They have said, Adam Silver, without putting a number against it, he has said if there's an outbreak that they'll shut down, and that this is it. They're either going to make this work or it's not going to happen. And I think he's been, you know, very clear about that. Is, you know, they understand that something could get in and cause them to shut it down. Now, they've also said, you know, one or two cases like it did previous is not going to shut them down. They now know kind of what they're dealing with, and they're not going to call the whole season off because they have one or two cases. But if there's a big outbreak, or if it's significant enough that I think some of the players really start to feel uneasy about moving forward, I think the NBA at that point will say, you know what, this isn't the right thing. Let's shut the whole thing down.
Were you surprised, though, with how smooth negotiations went in the NBA, considering we saw what happened in Major League Baseball, where it just seemed like, for a while, it seemed like it was inevitable, and Major League Baseball is going to get canceled. And it just seems like Rob Manfred just can't seem to really rally the troops. Same with the NHL, but the NHL always can't seem to, you know, figure out a way to get out of their own way. I guess, a lot of this kind of goes back to Adam Silver, and he is kind of viewed as this, you know, a league of his own, essentially, in terms of big four commissioners. What's your sense on how Adam Silver's handling of this is viewed, not only by the players, but front office officials across the league, and maybe even, you know, dipping into what fans are saying about Adam Silver and his handling of what is obviously just an imperfect situation that nobody could probably get right 100% regardless of what you do?
Yeah, I am not surprised that the fact that they were able to come together and get an agreement, because of the major four sports, they have easily the best working relationship with their players' union of any one of those sports. And they are very often aligned in the same way. They understand, hey, there's a lot of money at stake here. Let's make sure we're all going after this thing is, it was put to me a long time ago that they understand a half a watermelon is better than a whole grape. So let's make sure we're all going after, the right kind of mindset here. And then as far as the players with Adam Silver, they love and respect him. They see him as a real ally, because Adam Silver, since day one, has said, yes, I work for the owners. That is the job of a sports commissioner. But we have no league if we don't have the players. And it's important that, we take into account what they need, what they want, what's happening with them. So, he has been a players commissioner since he came in, and that has, move things along quite a bit in this situation particularly.
So, Keith, for those folks here in Buffalo who may have been in jest following along with the reopening procedures of the NBA, a lot of talk this week from the Buffalo Bills that media accommodations are going to be fairly strict. There's going to be no in-player interviews after games or locker room sessions. What is the role for the media during this this reopening of the NBA, and how do you expect it affects the way that the game is consumed by the by fans?
From the media side, it's somewhat similar. There's a very small amount of media in the quote-unquote bubble here in Florida. It's only about 10 or 12 people, so very, very few. It's all the big national names that everybody knows that's going to be in there. And those are the guys who are going to be doing kind of things in a much more normal way. But a lot gets done in the NBA with the walk and talks, or the, kind of sidle up to a guy and, you pull him aside for a minute and have a conversation. That is not allowed. It's going to be, in-person settings, but 6 feet apart and those kind of things and that. And then for all the rest of us, it's going to be all done via Zoom. As the NBA teams arrived here over the last few days, they've all started hosting media availabilities, and I've been on several of them, and it's all over Zoom. And it's really not all that different than a scrum. Instead of just having everybody all piled together and crowded around, inches away from the coach or the player, we're all just kind of doing our thing on camera. And it's a little bit different because you're not able to you've been in those media scrums, who shouts the loudest, gets their question answered. So it's not that, but and then as far as the broadcast go, it's going to look very similar to what you're used to. You're going to see the games. The NBA, each team brought with them somebody who could handle some social media. So you're seeing a lot of stuff you put out there. And the NBA players themselves are super active on social media. So they're putting stuff on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. They're doing all those things. So I think you're going to get the really good understanding and experience, and the game broadcast is going to be very much like what you're used to watching.
Keith Smith here, Yahoo Sports. He's a reporter for the NBA here on the West Hur Hotline. So let's talk a little bit about the actual in-game action here. I'm intrigued. There's no doubt about it. It's almost like I kind of forgot. I mean, I'm a big NBA fan, Keith. It seems like almost the 2020 season is kind of an afterthought. And what I mean by that is it's going to be weird coming back to play, considering we're reviving a season that feels like it has already finished up. So I want to look at the Eastern Conference first and foremost, because frankly, it does seem to be anyways. And I don't want to take a jab at the Miami Heat, because I do think that they've had a really nice season. They've got a nice young core in Miami, but it does appear anyways in the East, it seems like it's a one or two team race. If you want to throw the Boston Celtics in there too, if they can go on a run. Having said that, right, like, let's talk about what you believe expectations for these teams, how they've changed from March until July, because it is going to essentially be another season, Keith. It's almost like we have to turn the page on what we knew about these teams prior to March 17th or whatever the shutdown ended up starting to now, right? Like, I don't think we can view all of these teams the same lens, or with the same, whatever their record is right now going into this with that same lens, Craig. Like, do we have to maybe adjust some of our expectations for these teams?
Not the top teams. I don't think you need to lessen your expectations for them at all. I think in some ways what's going to be most different is that teams have had a chance to get healthy. Teams that were dealing with guys banged up. The Toronto Raptors, for example, they were, at very rare points this season did they have the entire roster together. They always seem to have at least one or two key players out, and now those guys are all back and ready to go. The Boston Celtics, who you mentioned, they were dealing with Kemba Walker, had some knee issues that was going to have to be managed the rest of the way. Now, Brad Stevens said they're going to take it slow with Walker to restart this, but it's not, it's just out of an abundance of caution. They feel like he's ready to go. Jaylen Brown, another key player for them, was dealing with some stuff. Giannis Antetokounmpo leading the bus. He was out with a knee injury when everything was shut down, and now he's back and ready to go. So I think for those top teams, those teams are going to come in. They're going to look a lot like the teams you were used to seeing. But potentially after you're through the initial early bumps, because it's probably going to be a little sloppy if teams pick up and get ready to go. But once you're in, halfway through those seeding games or into that first round of the playoffs, I think those teams are going to look good and potentially even better than they would have because everybody is fresh, healthy, and ready to go.
Yeah, and I kind of look to, Keith, to a team that is definitely – well, two teams. I think both LA teams are really interesting in this. The number one seed, the Lakers, and number two seed, the Clippers, out of the West. You know, how much advantage maybe would you give a team that is slightly younger? And maybe I'm looking at like a Dallas in this, where you've got young legs as your, kind of marquee players that are driving play for offense and defensive production. Opposed to a team like, the Lakers, who for the most part, other than Anthony Davis, like they have a lot of veteran leadership and their offense kind of runs through LeBron James, who is no longer a spring chicken. So with this layover, do you expect that to help a team that relies heavily on veterans, or maybe do you think it's going to take those teams like the Lakers or maybe even like a Houston? I know that James Harden's not like he's some old guy now, but like I do think that though, if you're a young team that you have young stars, you might have a slight advantage in that long break, maybe getting back into the groove of things.
Yeah, it's funny. There's two schools of thought on that, and I talked to coaches who are falling in both camps, and one coach told me, young teams, those are the teams that are going to do well because they're going to be able to pick up and go, and they're going to be flying right out of the gates. And it might take these veteran teams a little bit to get back in rhythm and really start feeling good. And one of his points was, if you're catching the Lakers, you probably would rather catch them in the first round than you would later, because by the time they're later in the playoffs, they're going to be right back to who they were. Now, that very same day, I talked to a coach later, and he said, I'm worried about those young teams because they're the ones who rely on the crowd to lift them, and they're the ones who need the fans and the stands and those kind of things. So I think what it ultimately comes down to is we don't really know what to expect. And all that it's really coming around in conversations is expect the unexpected. You may see upsets that you wouldn't have seen otherwise. There's no home court advantage. You might see, some of these young teams stun a team early. Dallas has been prominently mentioned because the belief is, if you've got a superstar player, which Luka Doncic absolutely is, that can go create offense, even when, maybe the shot isn't falling, but he can get to the basket and he can make things happen for himself and his teammates, it's good. But the other thing is these teams are getting back in the gym here over the last couple of days. Everybody's saying, almost to a man, how surprised they are, how good everybody looks. A little bit off, couple fumbles here and there, but they said, people look pretty good. And they're expecting everybody to kind of pick up and be ready to go. So I would say, by the time we're through with those seeding games and the playoffs start, we're really going to be looking at teams playing pretty good basketball. And then I think because of the lack of home court advantage, it's really going to come down to the best team wins, because you don't have, anything to kind of rely on to prop you up in a false way where maybe you do in the normal season.
Keith, I think I saw an interview talking to Jason Tatum about, do you believe the winner of this tournament? Do you believe the NBA champion that's ends up winning this tournament by the end of the summer and is crowned champion of the NBA. Do you think, and he mentioned, the question was, do you think there's going to be an asterisk next to that? Do you think that it'll be downplayed at all because it happened in such a unique way? And I think Jason Tatum's answer was somewhere along the lines of yes, but not because it's some sort of technicality, but that whoever wins this championship is going to be a team that had to overcome such adversity, so many outside elements in on their way to winning an NBA championship, that it should be viewed through the opposite lens, that it's actually maybe more impressive of a victory. Like, where do you stand in and what this ultimately means when we look back 10 years from now and there is no COVID and we're playing regular games again and life is back to normal? When you look back at the 2020 season, are we going to be saying, man, we got to mark an asterisk next to that one, or man, how impressive was it that, a team was able to carry over momentum from February and March into a July playoff that ultimately leads them to an NBA championship?
Yeah, I think when we look back at it, we're going to say that 2020 champion, we're going to look at it very similar to the lockout season, where instead of it being an asterisk, it's going to be more of a footnote of, oh, that was that weird year where there was that big pause and this team won. Now, I will caveat that with, if we get to, you know, the conference finals or the NBA finals, and one of the heavy favorites is wiped out because their entire team comes down with coronavirus,
right?
Then I think that's when it starts to feel a lot different, and we start to say, yeah, you know, this isn't exactly what we thought it was. But if every team gets through it, because think about last year, the Raptors won. But nobody goes back and says, yeah, but, you know, Kevin Durant got hurt, Klay Thompson got hurt. No, the Raptors won. There's injuries every year in the playoffs, and some teams always missing, you know, some key player. I mean, LeBron James went to the finals without Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love 1 year, and, you know, and nobody, you know, discounts that Warriors title either. So it is one of those things where I think we'll look back on it and say, you know, yeah, it was a weird season, but I tend to agree with what Jason Tatum and now several other players and coaches have said is, this whoever wins this thing is going to run a gauntlet here of this. And why they're feeling that way, too, is at no point did the NBA adopt any of these kind of more crazy ideas of let's do single elimination or, you know, weird kind of playoff styles. Everybody feels like, hey, other than the neutral court factor, this is very much a real season. Whoever wins is a real champion.
So, Keith, before I let you go, I want to ask you about how they ultimately decided to go with the system. They basically ended the season as if it ended in March and went with 8 teams from each conference like a normal playoff. Now, the NHL did not go that route. The NHL decided we're going to pick a pool of the top 24 teams. They're going to compete in a qualifier, and then the NHL playoffs officially begin from there. But obviously, with the NHL lottery, the similar lottery system with the NHL and NBA, a playoff team, one of the 24 teams qualified and actually won the lottery. Therefore, we actually have a second phase to the lottery. And I know a lot of people here in Buffalo, a team this year that was really underwhelming, that didn't deliver, and ultimately ends up getting kicked back all the way to the 8th pick. How do you believe, when you look at what the NBA did, they tried to stay as much in normalcy as possible, where the NHL really went off the beaten path, and I think now are seeing a lot of criticism based on that. Do you think the NBA made the right choice, and especially do you think they made a right choice for all the lottery teams that are in this, and they didn't sort of maybe, you know, get a full bubble of 24 teams or something where they really had to modify what they're doing?
Well, what the NBA did is they're bringing 22 teams because they are bringing in teams that are in playoff contention, and what they did was they looked back historically to say, what is the, you know, furthest back with the amount of games that were left that someone has made a run at this? And they found, you know, okay, it was about 6 games back. A team with the amount of games left had historic precedence for them making the playoffs. So that's where they cut it off. Now, a lot of people are inviting teams that really have no real chance, the Phoenix Suns, the Washington Wizards. They incorporated this play-in component. If the 9th seed is within 4 games of the 8th seed, there's going to be a play-in to determine who actually gets into the playoffs. But for their draft, they pushed their lottery back. So what they did is we'll know who the 16 playoff teams are, who the 14 non-playoff teams are, and then that's when the draft lottery will happen. It'll happen sometime while the playoffs are happening, very much like normal, because what the NBA wanted to do was give those teams that were in reasonable contention a shot to make the playoffs, while also maintaining as much normalcy as possible. And I think with the backlash, I'm not a big hockey guy, but I saw so much backlash to this whole idea of, you know, the ghost team, you know, now has the number one pick and these kind of things. I saw so much backlash to that. I think the NBA did as good a job possible putting this together to make it work.
Yeah, because I think there's such a emphasis on the teams that matter. And I do want to be careful by saying, you know, which teams matter and which don't. But frankly, it's the teams that are going to be actually legitimately competing that they care about. And I think the NHL went maybe a line too far in that, like, now there's just 7 teams that are nowhere because they didn't, no, none of them got the number one pick. And now they have to watch more than 3/4 of the league play in a tournament that they won't be able. And there are, the Sabres are likely going to have 10 to 11 months, Keith, without playing a hockey game. And I just, you know, I just don't think that when you look at it from the lens of the NBA compared to the NHL, I don't think there's really any arguing that the NBA is just a far superior league in terms of how it's run, how it's presented. The NHL does everything in its power to make it so difficult for fans of each team to watch games. I mean, the NBA is the most inclusive league in terms of fan and sponsorships and watchability. And I just think, you know, when you compare the two, there is no comparison. But I think to your point, the NBA did a really good job of making almost everyone feel like, listen, if we're not in this, at least we're going to have a shot shot at getting the number one pick, and maybe it won't be a team like, you know, I'm going to tell you what, Keith, the NHL will burn to the ground if, like, the Montreal Canadiens or the Toronto Maple Leafs win the lottery. People will riot the streets, and, like, that's not an overreaction. Like, it will be really bad for hockey if that happens, and I think the NBA did a really good job of, like, avoiding a situation like that playing out.
Yeah, they did, you know, and I think it, again, kind of goes back to it starts at the top. Adam Silver has a really good grasp on his owners, his players, what the teams want, what the fans want, how things are seen. They have a great relationship with their broadcast partners. So I think that's where it comes in. But, you know, things are happening a lot quicker and a lot easier, especially in these weird, trying, uncertain circumstances where you're really kind of creating something brand new. I think that's where, you know, those relationship pieces and Adam Silver's ability to bridge all those different gaps with different folks is huge, because he's kind of the central player in this. He's the one who has to work with everybody. And him and his staff do a great job of making sure, you know, fans are going to get something that they appreciate and like, and that the players and the teams are going to be behind it as well. And that's really, really important.
Keith, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate you being so generous with your time. Thanks for stopping on, talking some ball. I'm looking forward to watching NBA basketball again. I'm not going to lie to you. So thanks so much. We appreciate it. Tell the folks here who follow the NBA game who might not be following you on Twitter or find your work where they can find all your stuff.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Keith Smith NBA, KEITHSMITHNBA. You can find my written work at Yahoo Sports, Real GM, and Boston Celtics specific coverage at Celtics Blog as part of SB Nation.
Awesome, Keith. Thank you so much, man. Be safe and good luck covering the restart of the NBA season here, man. We'll be looking forward to it.
Thank you, Sam. I appreciate you having me. You all stay safe, you and yours.
Will do. Keith Smith there, Yahoo Sports on the West Her Hotline. Quick timeout. Jessica Smetala is up next. She is a producer and writer over at Sports Illustrated. We're talking college football coming up next in the WGR. Hey, everybody, welcome back. Sports Talk Saturday. Nate Geary here. Another segment or two coming your way before I call it quits for the day, go home and watch the rain from the confines of my front window. So, you know, that's Buffalo summers for you. I'm just kidding. I mean, it's been literally perfect weather. What could we possibly complain about? I mean, leave it to me. I'll find something to complain about.
The lawn needs it.
The lawn needs it. That's right. From resident dad, Corey, inside the producer room, the control room. He cares about the front lawn, so I'll give him this one, and he needs the rain. But let's go to the Western Hotline now for our final guest of the afternoon. Jessica Smetana of Sports Illustrated joins us here. Jessica, first and foremost, thanks for hanging out with us. I'm a big Twitter follower fan, if there's such things of yours. I'm a big, even though I'm from Buffalo, I'm a big Notre Dame Fighting Irish fan. And in fact, I will take a picture. I'm actually wearing a nice Notre Dame polo currently. So I know that you're a former grad and a big tweeter of the Notre Dame. So therefore, I'm a big fan of yours. Thanks for making time for me. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. And I think it goes both ways. I think people follow me because they like Notre Dame and agree what I have to say, or they hate Notre Dame and want to reply to everything very angrily all the time. Thanks for being a supporter.
That's definitely how it goes. Like, you know, I mean, listen, Notre Dame is kind of like the Yankees of college basketball or college football. And I get that. But here's the thing that I don't really understand about Notre Dame. It's not like we have, like, you know, 30 championships and we rub rings from the 60s and 70s in people's face like Yankees fans do. We just are on TV every single Saturday. We're just regularly available to any and all people. You would think that, like, hey, that's cool. We can watch Notre Dame football whenever we want. Like, why you gotta hate? I don't understand the hate around Notre Dame football.
I think some of our fans can be a little rabid and give the rest of us nice, level-headed fans a bad rap sometimes. But, you know, I think when it comes to college football, every fan base has some crazy fans.
You know, so, covering the Bills, you, Jessica, I would know nothing about crazy fans. I don't even know what you're talking about there. But Jessica, the reason I had you on is I wanted to talk some college football and obviously with Notre Dame, because I think everything going on, right? Like there is really no precedent for things happening today in 2020. I mean, this is the meme of all memes, 2020. It's just, there's so much good material, right? Having said that, college football is, you know, heading into uncharted territory here. We saw in college basketball right in March when the Ivy League pulled out. That was really the first domino to fall, and then the rust fell. March Madness didn't happen. Both men's and women's college basketball canceled for the season. All spring sports then canceled for the season. Are you worried about the first domino falling in college football? Is the Ivy League canceling their fall sports season? Because then that's the first domino to fall for the rest of college football?
Yeah, I'm definitely worried about that. I think that that's why if you follow college football, this week was kind of doom and gloom. And then we saw the Big Ten decide that they're going to have an all-conference schedule a day after that. And then Pac-12 followed, and a bunch of other conferences seem like they're going to follow. So it does seem like it was the first domino, but I don't know what is going to happen with the rest of the FBS Power 5 conferences. The Ivy League is obviously a smaller thing, is kind of its own thing, but it just does not seem very optimistic right now.
Yeah, and you know, I tend to look at the Ivy League as sort of like a perfect world for college football, right? Like, there isn't as much money. Doesn't feel like such a corporately run thing. It seems far more natural, and it's like this, just like, it's the purity of sport is like the Ivy League. So when I see them make a decision that has this much consequence, now, of course, as to your point, like, there isn't as much consequence to canceling an Ivy League football season, but I do think that if you're an FBS school and you look at what, you know, the Ivy League is doing, it's hard to ignore the steps they're taking to ensure their student athletes are safe, which I think is getting lost in all this, Jess. Like, this is about keeping the student athletes safe.
I think it's about safety, but I also think it's about liability for the schools and for the NCAA. I think that there's a lot that can go wrong because right now we just really don't have a lot of certainty about what football activities are going to do in terms of spreading the virus. If a player has it, do you quarantine the whole quarterback room? Do you quarantine the coaches? It just is this kind of slippery slope that we don't really know yet. And unfortunately, we won't really know until we have a season. And the interconnectedness of college football makes that really difficult. And especially because obviously the rosters are so big and there's so many coaches, and then students are on campus, and college campuses are a petri dish for, you know, flu disease and everything else anyway. So, yeah, I really don't know. To get back to your point, the Ivy League has a lot less to lose because they don't make the same billions and billions of dollars that, say, Alabama or Notre Dame or any of the other, you know, Power 5 schools make. But it's about safety, and it's also about liability. I don't think the NCAA wants to get sued if they are found to be at fault for putting a player's life at risk. And I don't think they're going to take that responsibility right now either.
Jessica Smetana here on the Wester Hotline from Sports Illustrated. Yeah, you know, Jessica, like, the term you use, liability, definitely doesn't fall on deaf ears with me. I think that's an important distinction that, or maybe this is just the line in the sand that we should draw with college sports in general, because I do think college sports gets viewed through, like, you know, beer goggles, right? Like, it's this perfect thing. It's about the student athletes. They don't get paid. Therefore, it's this, like, you know, holier than thou thing. But at the end of the day, like, you're right. It's more so about, well, how do we protect ourselves, and less about maybe protecting the student athletes. And maybe even it goes beyond that, Jessica. And maybe it's more about, you know, how do you like balance the liability with the loss of revenue that not only the schools are going to see with no football being played, but it also doesn't really fall on deaf ears that, like, a community like, you know, in Alabama and Tuscaloosa, like, that local economy, you know, 30% of the well-being of that economy runs around Alabama football. And as much as this is probably going to turn into a conversation of pay the damn players, I think it comes back to, like, there are more consequences outside of not football, just no football being played. Like, there are local communities at stake here, no?
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, St. Joseph County in Indiana gets a lot of its seasonal revenue during football season. But if fans can't attend the games and tailgate anyways, I think that revenue is going to be lost. And it seems like no matter what happens, there's not going to be fans in the stands this season. So I think the next thing, like, the economic argument aside, if you actually really care about players and player safety, it doesn't seem like we have a solution right now to keeping players safe on the field. And as time gets closer and closer to the start of the season, I think that's why you're seeing all of these conferences start making these tough decisions.
Jessica, if you're a student athlete right now, like, what kind of decisions do you need to make for yourself? Because I think if you're a Trevor Lawrence or a Justin Fields right now, I got to imagine there is a far different mindset about what to do if you're one of those two players, or if you're a fifth-year senior who this is probably your last go at major college football with no real professional aspirations afterwards. Like, Talk a little bit about like what that athlete, the fifth-year senior, the guy that may never strap the pads up again after this, compared to a Justin Fields who has a potential number one overall pick status at play here. Like, how do you balance those two types of players in this decision-making process?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard. And I think it would be hard for any team to, like, have a good conscience about putting players on the field right now if there isn't going to be 100% buy-in from every player on the team, because, like, as we've seen with what has been going on, it's really not just about, you know, one player being sick and it affecting themselves. It affects all of the people that they're around in the community and healthcare workers and et cetera. So it's kind of a, you know, from a player's mentality, I really don't know what the mentality of someone in the 18 to 22, 23 age group is right now. Especially athletes who, you know, we assume are healthy and someone that wouldn't be so negatively affected by this. But I don't know if we can actually even assume that, because we've seen that, you know, NBA players who have gotten sick have said that they're, you know, have pretty bad long-term effects and have gotten, you know, really set back in working out, and it's affected them really negatively. So I don't know what the mentality is of Trevor Lawrence versus Justin Fields versus fifth-year senior who wants one last ride with his boys, but I have to imagine that if there's any hesitation from any of those players, it's got to be pretty hard to put them out there on the field in good conscience.
All right, Jessica, I got a couple more here for you, and we're going to kind of shift right to Notre Dame. I know that you'll appreciate this thought process, right? Like, I actually appreciate people organically finding excuses to talk about why Notre Dame should be in a conference. For the first time, outside sources are actually running the conversation instead of, I'm sick of this independent, their schedules are crap always, why don't they just join a conference, like, blah, 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 blah. Well, now there's like an actual way for them to organically bring it into conversation. I got to appreciate it a little bit, but like, this is definitely a tough time for Notre Dame. I mean, six ACC games. I got to imagine the ACC is going to accommodate Notre Dame in some way. I think there's already been reports that they'll figure out a way to make sure that Notre Dame can play a full conference schedule. But with that all being said, like, for the people that are saying, like, this is finally the time for Notre Dame, like, what's your response to them?
I think that that's ridiculous. I think that Notre Dame has this relationship with the ACC for a reason, and it's because it benefits both Notre Dame and the ACC, and that's why the ACC isn't going to leave Notre Dame out to dry if there is some type of conference-only scenario this season. And Notre Dame is a member of the ACC in all of their other Olympic sports and men's basketball, and I think when the ACC network was launched, having Notre Dame as a member school was part of that leverage that got them that pretty nice deal with ESPN. So I think that Notre Dame will be fine, and the mutual beneficial relationship with the ACC is going to work out really nicely for both of them. If there is some type of, you know, college football playoff in December, which we obviously hope there is if there's a season, it's going to benefit the ACC to have Notre Dame in their conference anyways, because the ACC is, as we saw last year, one of the weaker conferences right now outside of Clemson. So having them from a competitive standpoint, I think, is a huge advantage this season too. But Notre Dame, if they haven't joined a conference yet, they're not going to do it. It's not the pandemic isn't going to be the thing that makes them, you know, like Notre Dame, this is part of the school's identity. It's part of their tradition. It's something that has been part of the football team since its inception at the turn of the century. And it's just not going to change because of one season.
So my last one for you is kind of a thought process on the upcoming season if games are played, right? How excited are you? I get the sense you and I are very similarly close in age, so therefore you were probably in school or at least a heavy Notre Dame fan while Tommy Rees was still playing. Like, I felt like overly excited about this season, like coming into it, waiting for Tommy Rees to finally get the opportunity to call plays for a full season with a guy like Ian Book that has been in the program for a few years now. Like, I'm a big Tommy Rees fan. I was when he was playing. I am now as a coach. Like, you know, do you get the sense that like this program and maybe Tommy Rees in particular, that this is going to be the start of what Tommy Rees could turn into a potential head coach in the future, whether it's at another Power Five conference or another school? Like, I get the sense that Tommy Rees is kind of one of these up and coming play callers that I'm just really looking forward to have him call plays this year and hopefully the near future as well after this year.
Yeah, I think the feeling on Tommy Rees is very high right now. The players are really excited about it, which I think is very important. They've been around him a lot in the quarterback room for the last couple of years. And I think the biggest negative criticism that he got when he was hired full-time as the offensive coordinator in the winter was that he was young and inexperienced. But I actually think that that's a little unfair. I think he's young and experienced. He's been around college football his entire life. He's worked at Northwestern and Notre Dame. He was a Notre Dame quarterback. I don't think there's anyone who quite understands the pressure of being a Notre Dame player and quarterback like a former Notre Dame player and quarterback. So just from like a locker room rapport perspective, I think he's great for the team. But I think that, you know, the ceiling's high and I have high hopes for him. But well, I guess we'll find out. Maybe this year, maybe next year.
Jessica, thank you so much for hopping on. I know it was kind of last minute, and I really appreciate you coming on, talking some Notre Dame football and college football with me. Enjoy the rest of your summer and lead up, hopefully, to watching some college football. We really appreciate it here in Buffalo.
Thank you. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
Will
go
do.
Irish.
Absolutely. Go Irish. Thanks, Jessica. Jessica Smetana there of Sports Illustrated on the Wester Hotline. Yeah, go Irish is right. You know, I do find it to be an interesting conversation because a lot of my friends, actually almost all of them universally hate Notre Dame. I'm like one of the only people that I know. I've got like one of my good buddies. We go to Notre Dame games every year. This will be the first year in 4 years that we won't be in South Bend for a game, which is depressing. We went to the Michigan game 2 years ago, Georgia. We've been to Western Michigan. So we've seen some good football. And listen, you can hate Notre Dame all you want. Go to South Bend one time to go see what that place is like. It's unbelievable. It's one of the most unbelievable experiences you could have at a live football game.
It's one of the most famous stadiums in college football.
No question.
So what are they? It's Notre Dame. It's Michigan. It's Ohio State.
Yep.
It's
USC.
Yeah, USC.
I'll put USC in there. Florida, the Swamp.
Mm-hmm. I don't. You know what's weird is I don't think of Alabama.
I don't. Not as like a place you got to be.
Right.
No.
Not as like a stadium.
No.
It's different.
And Notre Dame. So Notre Dame made significant changes to the stadium and the campus around the stadium over the last 4 or 5 years. I went right before the remodel was done, and then right after. The remodel is unbelievable. They've actually combined areas of the campus to the stadium. So, like, the medical campus is actually connected to the stadium, which is super cool. They created, like, Notre Dame was one of those stadiums that was, it was kind of, like, outdated, but outdated on purpose because it was supposed to kind of have that old school feel. Well, they've updated it while keeping the sort of, like, old school feel, but like you walk into the grandstand area where like concessions are and you're like, wow, this is unbelievable. Like gold arches with like just it's an unbelievable experience. Even if you hate Notre Dame, find a team that you like on the schedule. Take the 6 hour drive to South Bend. It's like 5.5, 6 hours. Spend the night in Michigan where it's cheaper and an Airbnb you could do for $100 a night and then drive the 30 minutes from Michigan to Indiana, go watch a game, and you simply just you won't be disappointed. It's such an unbelievable atmosphere, especially when they're facing a rival. The Michigan game was unreal. It was unreal. Thanks to Shea Patterson for stinking. We appreciate you, bud. 803-0551, 888-552-550. Closing segment coming up next. We'll put a bow on this whole show and thank some of the guests and calls we had today and maybe preview a week that is a pretty interesting week to come in the world of sports. We've got that coming up next here on WGR. All right, welcome back. Final segment, Sports Talk Saturday here. Rain's finally dying down a bit. It was a nasty one during the middle of the show, though. Like it was really coming down there.
Had some good lightning action.
Was there some lightning?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't see it. You know, the other day, it has been awfully hot and humid. The other day, me and my girlfriend were leaving dinner, and there was just this big cloud in the sky. It was a big, tall, just meaty cloud. And we got a couple good, really cool, like, boomerang videos of it, but, like, just lightning. That's it. There was just this big lightning cloud and giant strikes of lightning just in the middle of the Hamburg sky. I was like, this is pretty cool, but also freaking terrifying. You know, like, what weird times, man. Weather, You know, locusts are next, I'm sure.
We usually don't get, like, subtropical thunderstorms. That stuff that's usually, you know, Florida, mid-Atlantic, southeast kind of action. We usually don't get that kind of stuff up here. So when we do get, like, a really lightning-intensive storm, it really stands out. There was one, what was it, like, 2 weeks ago? Do you remember? What was that one that rolled in? That was a,
brother,
that was a lot.
So I live down in the city, and I have, like, 20-foot front windows.
Oh, boy.
And we were standing in front of it like, yo, I'm a little concerned right now. But the thing is I literally had water running, and my apartment's fairly new. I had water running on the inside of my windows
coming down.
That's how hard it was raining.
That's not.
And sideways.
No, that's not up to code.
No, not good. So I had to have, you know, the peeps come in and seal up the top and everything. But see, if I was a homeowner, I would have had to done that myself. But that's a whole other story. Yeah. That's just me taking a shot at people who own homes, which is a weird hill to die on. But
don't do it.
It's a weird hill to die on. I'm probably going to buy my own home soon anyways. But, like, you know, I'm the kind of young guy who lives in an apartment who calls somebody and they fix crap so I don't have to spend money. It's pretty cool. And I don't have to mow lawn, Corey. Ha, ha, ha.
It's true.
No lawns being mowed
by me. I haven't mowed a lawn in 2 weeks because nothing's growing.
That's actually –
probably going
to change. Listen, some of these golf courses, they could use the water. Let's put it that way. Thanks to all my guests today. Evan Silva, Keith Smith, Jessica Smetana, and Greg Thompson from Cover One. Appreciate everyone there. Thanks to some of our callers, Mike and Sean. Thanks for engaging and kind of talking with me through everything today. We appreciate it. I won't be in next week, I believe. I believe I have a golf tournament. I do. I do have a club championship next week, which I will be competing in. So I will not be around next week, Saturday, but I'll be back the following week as we prep you for NFL training camp, which starts really, really, really soon. So thanks to everybody for listening today. Sports Talk Saturday. If you missed any, of course, you go to WGR550.com, on-demand audio. It's all up there, so check it out there. And next time you'll hear from this station and local programming will be on Monday morning for Howard and Jeremy in the morning at 6 a.m. Thanks for listening here on WGR.
Radio.com Rewind, driven by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown.
It's the perfect time for a powerful business refresh during Dell Technologies Cyber Savings event. It starts now with up to 50% off high-performance Windows 10 business laptops, desktops, and servers, plus top-brand electronics. It's also your chance to streamline IT and simplify PC life cycles with PC as a service. Dell Technologies recommends Windows 10 Pro for Business. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/smallbusinessdeals.
Today on Hey Culligan, hard water hurts appliances. Go for Glenn in Glenview.
Yeah, hey Culligan, my appliances aren't that old and they're already on the fritz.
Sounds like your hard water might be giving your water appliances a hard time, but there is hope in the form of a Culligan high-efficiency water softener that helps extend the life of dishwashers, washing machines, heating systems.
Hey Culligan?
Yeah, Glenn?
Yeah, hook me up.
Glenn, one high-efficiency appliance-saving softener already on the way. Let us help you out with a free in-home water test with the local Culligan water expert at Culligan.com.
I'm Listening Daily, here to help end the stigma of talking about mental health. During these challenging times, listening is fundamental to promoting understanding and healing. Here's licensed therapist Dr. Chris Donahue with a daily mental checklist.
The first thing you can do every day is start your day by asking yourself, what am I grateful for? That sets a positive tone. Also, in what ways and with whom am I going to connect to today? Because again, we're working on reaching out to others, letting them connect to us, but also making sure we're not getting lonely and isolated. We also want to look at expectations we have on ourselves. Be flexible, hold it loosely, allow yourself to have a day that is not necessarily the normal or the standard. Also, making sure you're going outside, in what ways am I going to go outside for sunlight and fresh air? And finally, how today am I going to move my body? Because movement is part of physical health, but also part of mental health.
Let's end the stigma of talking about mental health. Find out more at imlistening.org.
Find whatever you're looking for this month at Northtown Kia for your snap delivery. The simple Northtown sales process just the way you want it. It's Janet Snyder. Get to Western New York's number one Kia dealer all month long and start your shopping from home at northtownkia.com. Lease the 2020 Kia Sportage LX automatic all-wheel drive for just $189 a month. Just $189 a month for 24 months. $3518 due at signing comes with alloy wheels, backup camera, remote keyless entry, and more. Northtown Kia is your home for Northtown Snap delivery. It's as easy as 1-2-3.
On approved credit lease, $3518 due at signing includes all taxes, first payment, and $650 acquisition. 12,000 miles per year, 20 cents per mile excess. Security deposit waived. Number one volume dealer based on January to December 2019 Polk results. Prior sales excluded. Must take delivery by 7/31/20. Stock number 20K156. MSRP 26,720. Promotion for in-stock vehicles only.
Remember, whatever you're looking for,
you'll find it at Northtown.
Holiday Valley recognizes life is hard right now, but Western New York has dealt with adversity before. We will always move forward. We have courage. We fight back. We are defined by our determination and compassion. We share Buffalo. We can do this, Buffalo. Let's work together and support our local businesses and heroes. Hashtag Move Buffalo Forward. Brought to you by Radio.com in partnership with Holiday Valley Double Black Diamond Golf. Challenging golf has never been more fun.
A lot's changed this year, but at Buffalo Trim Men's Haircuts, they haven't. With locations in Blaisdell, Amherst, East Amherst, and Williamsville, you can still walk in anytime, 7 days a week, no appointment necessary. And while the competition is raising their prices during these uncertain times, locally owned Buffalo Trim is keeping theirs at just $17. They get it. So you'll always pay the same price and enjoy amenities like HDTVs playing sports and a pool table. And don't worry, they're following every CDC guideline to ensure everyone's safety. Check them out at buffalotrim.com.
You make sure his toys don't have any sharp edges. You taught her what to do when the smoke alarm goes off and to wear a helmet when she rides her bicycle. You do so much to keep your child safe. But are you using the right car seat for your child? Car crashes are a leading killer of children ages 1 to 13.